for Calhoun Parish. Not to ever touch his daughter, Anna Lee. Far to look at her with lustful eyes was certain. To get your time in the penitentiary. It was true, she was quite voluptuous. And it was true, she had eyes for me. Then one night at a dance, she walked up to me and asked me, would I meet her down by the creek? As I listened to her dangerous proposal, I thought about the hatcher kissing me. As I shook my head and quietly left the party, I heard her laugh and say, you'll be sorry. Lord, I'm hurt. Then there came upon my door a loud disturbance. I opened it to the sheriff and his deputy. He said, son, did you molest my daughter? I said, Sheriff, I do not know of what you speak. And I didn't. Well, he grabbed me roughly by the collar and flung me sprawling out into the street. There were days in the jail for claustrophobia and all on account of that wench Anna Lee.
I suppose we could applaud, can't we? Why not? They did last night. Last night, the Troubadour. Tony Joe White opened up with Little Feet. Man from, what was your group, Bob? Who was supposed to be in there? Phil's group, Melting Pot, was supposed to be in there, and then Gator Creek, and now it's Little Feet. So, sorry we gave you the wrong information twice, but with that's what's up the Troubadour right now and through Sunday. On Paul Kagan's Music Cast, which is a service that goes out to disc jockeys all over the country, this is the February 15th issue. And on the Tomorrow chart, they got a list of records, and they include the entire new album on Warner Brothers of Tony Joe White. And on page one, it says, Tony Joe White, Swamp Time Again. One of the few outcroppings of Deep South music on a major label was Cajun fiddler Doug Kershaw's two reprise albums, but in spite of his intensity, Kershaw's one-gear swamp drive hasn't made it all the way down the pike yet. Now, having captured Tony Joe White from Monument, Can Kay Christofferson be far behind, in parentheses? Warner Brothers is mounting a massive campaign to put him over. He's got the ingredients, a bit of Chris, a bit of Elvis, a bit of Luke the Drifter, Hank Williams in his recitation phase for you country nostalgic fans. We can see a lot of poke salad being served this year. You know, I don't know why they have to say there's a bit of this and a bit of that, because that's the one thing that we noticed when we first heard you. You don't sound like anybody.
No, man. I don't like people around that. And I sure ain't a Cajun. I don't, you know, if you say you're from Louisiana, everybody always says you're Cajun. Which, you know, it's not, Cajun's all right. It's just I'm not a Cajun. I don't even, can't even understand them when they talk.
And Monday, Monday, that old day.
Yeah, right. They always say, here's so-and-so, why, Ranger Cajun from Louisiana, Ranger.
Well, where is Oak Grove, anyhow?
It's in the, it's right close to the Arkansas border.
So you're in the north part.
I'm in, I can go 15 miles and get in Mississippi, and 20 and get in Arkansas, right in the corner.
You know what Mitch Jane says about people from Arkansas? He's from Missouri, right?
Who?
Mitch Jane of the Dillers. Ever seen them?
What did he say?
He says there's a lot of people from Arkansas come up to Mississippi, come up to Missouri. He says you can always tell them. He says they got cuts all over their face from learning to eat with a fork. So you're not really in the Delta country, even, are you?
Yeah, I am in Delta. Yeah.
It is. It's still Delta all the way up there.
You see, Cleveland, Mississippi.
Yeah.
And right over there, pretty close to Memphis, that's a cotton belt. Mm-hmm. And it's right across the Mississippi Bridge, right across the river from Eudora, Arkansas.
Where they put the devil in jail.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
That's where the bridge is about 10 miles from there, Mississippi Bridge.
Yeah. Jerry Jeff was here, and he said something about the Huey Long Bridge, you know?
Yeah.
Across, is that the one you're talking about?
No, the Huey Long Bridge is over, I think, on the other side of Monroe or something. They got so many bridges down there named after guys.
Yeah, well, I named a few things after Huey.
Yeah.
I said it's a great bridge. It cost, I don't know how many million dollars during the Depression, and WPA and the whole thing, and doesn't go anywhere. I spent a few years mostly wearing one uniform or another down that part of the world, down Biloxi and past Christiana, Mississippi, and in New Orleans. But I never got up in your neck of the woods. I thought you were from Corpus Christi, Texas, and
no,
you've been telling everybody how
I spent some time down there. I lived there before I moved to Memphis. 5 years.
How long have you been in Memphis?
Nearly 2 years now.
Making music?
Yeah.
Is that where you do all your recording? You go to Nashville?
I did a couple albums in Nashville, but I did this last one all in Memphis, and I continued was just done mostly in Memphis.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable when they try to put a label on somebody, and they always do.
Yes. Ain't no meat in it, you know. If somebody's got something to play, let them play, and don't try to analyze and break it down and wonder what it is. If you like it, listen to it.
Right. As a matter of fact, I heard something. Tell me if it's true or not. When Poke Salad Annie first came out, we live in an age that's polarized, right?
That's what?
And polarized, you know, people go one way, another way, and never the twain shall meet. And supposedly, and you wrote a couple songs about that. One in particular, which Miss Springfield chickened out on the last verse.
Yeah, with me.
Yeah. And they were playing Folk Salad Annie on the all-black stations where they play nothing but black artists until they found out you weren't.
Yeah.
And then they dropped you like a hot potato.
Yeah.
Is that? Did you hear about that?
I heard some of them did, yeah.
Yeah, isn't that silly? It was good enough to play when they didn't know what color you were. What's the difference? I don't like Crow Jim any better than Jim Crow.
It's a drag, man, because I buy a lot of black folks' records, man. They're my favorite. I love, you know, blues and stuff, and I buy them. And I don't see why we'd have to drag color into the music at all.
Yeah, well, That's one thing about the music of our time. It's supposed to reflect our time one way or another.
Yeah.
I did, on a Saturday night, I did an hour and a half. I didn't intend to do it, you know, but this is an accidental program, as friend Mercer could tell you. Bob Mercer is here from California Record Distributors. He's a good friend of Tony Joe. And when I got all excited about Tony Joe, how long ago was this, Bob? Year, year and a half? Huh? Yeah. Bob was distributing Monument Records, but that had nothing to do with it. He says, no, this is really, he says he's a great guy and he's a big talent and he's marvelous on stage, you know. So I started beating Doug Weston and all those people over here. When are you going to get Tony Joe? When are you going to get Tony Joe? And finally it's come to pass and he's out here. And we have a colorblind station. I think he's kind of colorblind himself. But I did an hour and a half of a black and white confrontation, you know, from the ultra, ultra, ultras on both sides, right?
Yeah.
And right in the middle of that was Willie Laura Mae Jones, because essentially there's more hurt in that last verse than there is in all the anger and the rest of it, and the rest of it on both sides, I think. And that's the one, of course, that Dusty Springfield didn't record. I wonder whose idea that was, that you leave that off.
I don't know if they cut it off because of the time limit. It was really a drag to do that. I don't know really why they didn't sing it.
It was like Peggy Lee when she recorded Randy Newman's Love Story. You know, the song ends up until we pass away, and that's all. Being over. Song's finished. It's complete. It's just exactly what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And she said, play cards all day, and playing checkers all day. Playing checkers can be fun, or something like that. She chickened out. I guess she was afraid that you can't say anything about dying on a record, right?
Playing checkers, though.
yeah, right. You got anything we haven't heard? Or do you feel like doing Will and Laura May? Joan.
Yeah, I like... I'd really not like to do Will and Laura May, because that's kind of, you know...
That was them?
I've sung it enough.
Yeah, all right.
It's there. I'll tell you, let me do Lightning Hopkins to you. Come, baby, please don't go.
Group effort. last night, there was the usual press party at the Troubadour, the press opening. And celebrity crowd and what have you. And Jerry, Tony Joe got up there and he worked with just acoustic guitar, just what he's doing now. First, what, 5, 6 numbers?
Yeah, 5. I think it is 5 numbers.
Yeah. And of course, on the record, we always heard you with full band behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it sure felt good, just a man by himself. And my wife turned to me after he'd done about the 5th night. She said, "I wish he'd relax up there."
Relax.
He was just as comfortable as if he was sitting on his own front porch, the neighbors coming by on a nice, cool summer evening.
Well, I have some butterflies, they get tied up on me. But I got a sort of sleepy expression, so people think I'm relaxed all the time.
Oh, no. Everybody, they get on. This is the first, is this your first California engagement?
Yeah, I reckon so. I played one time for an agency party down there at the Troubadour by myself one night. But it was, thank you. It wasn't a regular job like this.
Fillmore,
yeah.
What film?
Fillmore.
Oh, the Fillmore. Yeah, I heard about that. As a matter of fact, Bob Mercer told me he absolutely busted it up there. He got up there with Sammy, the drummer.
Yeah.
And that electrified wah-wah guitar and did it.
Yeah.
All by yourself in that place. And usually they eat people alive unless they come in enough numbers, right, to hold off the troops. How'd it feel?
It was all right. I played there one time. I just kind of set in or something. Remember when we went up there, Bob?
Right.
And just by myself, and it seemed it went over even better that time than it did when I had the drum.
Really?
Something happened. The sound was, it kept feeding back, and the drums would get loud over the guitar. But we got some good grooves going on the thing, and the people dancing and stuff. But to my and Sam's opinion, it could have sounded better.
Let me ask you something. You've been playing around the country now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of places usually? What kind of crowd?
Do I enjoy?
No, that you have been working recently.
I haven't been nothing but college.
College concerts.
In a long time.
And you do it with 3 pieces right behind you?
Yeah. Usually I use a drummer, but I've started using bass and drums now. This is the first club I've played at since the Inferno in Kingsville, Texas.
When was that?
Well, I was there a year before last, man.
The Inferno?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. It's a little different kind of club here, though, I guess.
Yeah, this club, you can get your head knocked off and you don't sing right.
Yeah. There's a couple of places in Phoenix that some of our friends have worked, and they say, bring a gun, bring a large friend,
right.
Bring a pitchfork. Don't bother bringing a guitar. They're not going to listen to you anyhow.
That's it, man. If you can play Woolly Bully now, you got it made.
Yeah. So everybody be Sam the Sham. but the question I wanted to ask you was, I've been feeling it out here, and they say it's happening around the country, but I just want to know for somebody who's been wandering around the country, how much is everybody going for the quieter, the acoustic thing, the singer out front, the lyrics understandable, just making music instead of waves?
It's the thing. It's really doing it, man. I'm glad because all the time I was in Corpus, I played by myself, and I never could get ahead, and I'd play and I learned all my tunes, my licks by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go cut the album, I'd use a band. And now I'm finally getting back where I can sit down in front of some people and you know, and play five or six songs before I use, which I really like to do is play with a band. You know, like last night, if it's kind of quiet but still got a good groove to it. But I like to really just sit down with a guitar and just myself, to, you know what I'm saying? I'm glad it's coming around to that now.
Yeah. It's been a long time coming. I think people care about people singing more.
They do. They listen to your words more, and they just like to listen to you now. You know? They don't care about a bunch of stuff in the background trying to pretty it up. If you got a raw, gravelly voice or something, if you got something to say, they, people are listening.
Raw, gravelly voice. Well, of course, boy soprano like you.
Yeah.
That's a hard time. Do you have my coffin nails anywhere around? How do you see them? Something to smoke. I'm not going to ask you what your favorite song is, because anybody who writes their own material usually asks them that question to say the word I'm working on now. unless you got a different answer. Is there something you've done you particularly like? Or something that hasn't been successful that you feel ought to be?
There is one thing I was saying the other day, and I believe that's my favorite song.
Which one?
I can't remember what it is. I really can't, man, but I mean, I was driving along, I said, I believe it was, it might not be my favorite, but I really like it. I think it was Mavis Staples singing, "A House Is Not a Home."
Oh, yeah?
Have you ever heard that?
Yeah.
That man, she's got the soulfulest voice.
I like her old daddy. I like old Roebuck. You know, Mavis is fine, but I think nobody sounds like old Roebuck. You heard that do that? "Will the Circle Be Unbroken," haven't you?
I don't think
you haven't? We'll play it for you later. That's where he sings lead. And it's very strange. And the harmonies are very strange.
Yeah, I don't believe I've heard it yet.
Yeah, you like it. You in particular like it. Sing us something. Thank you.
clover. I've traveled to muddy waters in my dreams. Oh, yeah.
Pretty country down there. Where you come from?
Yeah, it gets good a lot of times of year. I got a place up in the Ozarks in Mountain View, Arkansas. It's really pretty.
It is, huh?
Yeah, all the time. You know.
Up on a hill?
It's mountains, yeah. It's all mountains.
It's
1,204 acres. It's a, you know, we raise horses.
Most of it going up and down, right?
Yes. We got about 300 acres in pasture, I guess, flat land, and the rest of it's just big streams, you know, runs through it and mountains.
Oh, boy. How many of us are looking for a place like that?
Man,
how much time do you spend there?
A good bit.
You do?
Yeah. It's a 4-hour drive from Memphis, and every time I get 4 or 5 days in a row off, I usually go up there.
That's great. Take family?
Yeah.
Yeah. You got how many kids?
Two.
Two. Got one my daughter's age about?
How old are you? Nine. Yeah, I got a girl at 6 and the boy's 11.
Mm.
You might have your boyfriend after you. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. There are so many guys who are now breaking through, right? Lightfoot's got his first hit after, 11, 12 years.
And I sure like that song, too.
Isn't it a good song?
Yeah.
But he has written so few songs that aren't, you know, at least at that level, one after another. It's amazing how consistent the guy is. But now they're beginning to find out all over the country, you know. And Jake Holmes had something of a hit with So Close after about the same amount of time knocking around. And a lot of the media start treating somebody, you know, as if they're an overnight star.
Yeah.
When they've been paying dues for a while. How long have you been singing, Tony?
It's 11 years now, I think.
11 years.
Yeah, I played in clubs, you know, around Louisiana and Texas for about 8 years before Polk sat here, you know, making $10-$15 a night. In fact, year before last, I was playing for $15 a night.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they used to pay in the coffee shops out here about 10 years ago. Guys come in, they sing all night, and they get $10, right?
Yeah.
And very often without a stage even to sing on. You know, got to sing at a table someplace. And
you know, I just had an old stool, you know, in the corner down there. And it was good, some good times, man. I had a good time then as I have now.
Well, I'll tell you, now, after Polk Salad, you know, of course, that was a pretty large hit. You sold over 800,000 copies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that your first album?
Black and White?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's the first recording you ever did? Yeah, well, now, I was talking to Bob before you came up, Bob Mercer, and you're in pretty good company. You got Phil Walden back there. But I'll tell you, young man, you come to the big city, and everybody's talking about you're going to be a star. And I won't give you a few friendly words of warning. There's a bunch of people in this world. They got one talent, living off other people's talent, hanging around like vultures, ready to take up all your time.
Yeah.
And what they do is surround you because they're already there. They'll light your cigarette. They'll hold your coat. They'll stand at the door of your dressing room. They'll laugh at your jokes if they heard them the 25th time. And there's plenty of them all around. And what they do is make a wall around you so that your real friends, the ones that you, you know, came along with, can't get close.
Yeah, we have them in Memphis.
You do?
Yeah, several. They all everywhere, you know.
Yeah, well, people say.
But you're right about the wall. It does. It gets you to where you don't have too much to do with anybody. And so naturally you cut out people that you really dig to.
That's right. And I've seen a few people that you like and my listeners like, and I'm not mentioning any names. But they suddenly turn around, you know, with all of this hysteria and this hassle and this excitement that's going on, and you don't do anything short of the limousine route with practically with the Secret Service, you know, running around and the big concerts and the 18,000 seat auditoriums and the whole hysteria, and suddenly they turn around and they're the loneliest, most bewildered people in the world.
Yeah, you can get that way.
And everything they make gets eaten up. Yeah, my wife knows a little bit about that. She made a record once upon a time, sold a million copies.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What was it?
A thing called Walk Right In.
Is that it?
Mm-hmm. And she went through it, you know. As a matter of fact, that song wouldn't feel, as a matter of fact, comes from Memphis. Gus Cannon. The jug band did that originally back in the 20s. No, he's from Memphis. You sure he's from Georgia? Well, you're the expert. Yeah. So, I'm just saying that very often, this kind of period in a performer's career, it's the most exciting and the most filled with promise. And it's also the most dangerous.
Yeah, well, I kind of dig the way it is because I've been at it a long time, and Polk happened. I really got more attention than, you know, aggravation when Polk sound first hit from people and stuff, you know. And now it's getting to where kids and, you know, ain't rushing your stage and stuff like that. They sitting and listening to you and things. Like down at the Troubadour last night, when I get through one of my sets, I didn't have no people bothering me at all.
How about
concerts? Concerts is, there's only one place that I go and it's hectic, and it's in Alabama. When I play there, you can't get out of your room and nothing on it. But,
where, Birmingham?
Birmingham and Montgomery. And, but like the Troubadour, you know, they're sitting and listening to you, and they know what you need to sit back and cool off, man, after you get through the set. At least it seemed that way, because I didn't have nobody coming in and lighting cigarettes and nothing. I quit smoking anyway.
Good. I haven't.
I'm on my eighth week, I think.
Of not smoking?
Yeah.
How tough is it?
It's tough. Especially when you're starting to open up a new gig somewhere.
Yeah.
But I've got it, man.
Did you quit cold? Did you quit cold?
Yeah.
Cold turkey, right?
I went to the ranch and did it. That's when I said, that's the only place I'm going to be able to make it. So I went up there and I just quit. Well, I seen this, what really made me quit, my father-in-law had an operation on his nose or something.
Yeah.
And I went, took him to the hospital, and we was all over, and this old fellow was in bed with him. No ending, so And we, you know, got to talking, laughing around, and he was a fine man. Boy, he was about 65 years old, but he acted younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And they opened him up the next morning. He was just burnt. And I never did see him, and I said, oh, you know, it just made me just look at him, you know, because there he was, just as healthy acting, man.
And what was it, lung cancer?
Yeah.
So he's gone?
I imagine he is, but now.
Yes, we're...
You want some gum?
We're talking to Tony Joe White, who is at the Troubadour. This is KRHM Los Angeles. And, that's all right. The cats will start playing with it.
I don't know, it's really hard to explain. It's nervousness and feeling good, feeling soulful, and feeling unsoulful.
It's different every time, though, isn't
it?
How much of the audience are you aware of when you're working? I know some people work completely blind to who's out there, and some people work as if it's a living room like this, where the people are very real to them.
I try to keep the audience out of my mind until I really get to feel it myself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Get limbered up. Because if I concentrate on them, you know, I'm not going to get nothing going myself. But when I start to feel it, they feel it too. If you're feeling something, people can tell it, and they come right on up with you.
Yeah. Yeah, you had a good time last night, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The second set, man, was, not too many people there, but, man, it was hot. Everybody in there, you know, was really...
They come to listen. They really do at the Troub, but it's not just a professional crowd, because you get them, like, on the first set on the opening night, you know.
Yeah.
Most people in there are in the business one way or another. But the people who listen to this program and the people who are the general Troubadour crowd, they're pretty serious about the music, and they have respect for the people who make it. And that's why, unless you invite the scene, per se, you know, in the dressing room, they won't bug you. They're there to hear you sing.
Yeah.
And they respect your privacy as well.
That's good.
And they'll break their necks, you know, in a quiet way to give you all the help you want. You can do things that would, I suppose, get catcalls in some towns. As long as they're honest mistakes or string breaks on the guitar, you know, some people get terribly uptight, right, when string goes.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you can sit up on a Troubadour stage, retune your guitar, take a shower if you're comfortable, they are. They'll just sit around and wait for you to do whatever you're going to do next.
That's a good audience.
Yes, it is. And furthermore, you know, they have some idea what you're doing.
He was in Memphis. He called me Memphis one time, we had did a session together, and he was telling me about how nice it was up there and everything, and I was wanting to move up there. And so I called him. He was at Jack's Boat Dock in Mountain View, Arkansas. And I finally got a hold of him. I had a job at the Fillmore.
Wasn't it the Fillmore?
Fillmore West. And we never played together or anything except on the session. He did two tunes in it. And so we all met and went to San Francisco and played up there. It was really fun. And he's been kind of off and on ever since. And he plays drums just like I play guitar. It's, it fits. It sounds like four hands working on the same instruments. Yeah, he's right there on the dot.
Yeah, it makes a very full kind of sound.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't think out of one guitar, one drum, right?
Yes. A lot of people used to... When we'd go, you know, play just me and drums, they would swear we had bass and some kind of organ and everything.
Yeah, well, you got a lot happening on that guitar, first of
they
all.
Thought we was hiding it behind stage, but Creason's got such a heavy foot, you know, he sounds like a bass. And I carry a lot of bass on my guitar, so it...
I wonder what it is about the southern climate that brings out guys with a strong foot. Look at Kenny Buttrey. You heard Kenny play.
Yeah, but his foot ain't close to creasing.
Oh, wait a minute.
I played with Kenny the other day.
He's
great, man. Yeah, he's out of sight drumming. Creasing just got that old gut.
Yeah. Yeah, he's there. And the nice thing about it is he doesn't bring any attention to himself.
Mm.
And you got a good keyboard man, too.
He's fine, Utley. Can't be beat. Mac Utley.
Utley, honey.
Ugly? Dang, no.
Well, she hears funny, you know.
Well, it's clamoring out here, man.
Yeah, right.
So, Utley's probably he's the best organ player I've ever. He's my type that I like better than anybody. He gets a soulful tone out of an organ that a lot of people don't get.
How about your bass player? Who's he?
He's Robert McGuffey. He played with me during all those club years.
Really?
Yeah.
Carries the scars with him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you got $10 a night, how much did he get?
We all got the same.
Yeah.
It was three of us. We got $100. One time we got $100 a week when we first went to Kingsville. Three of us, it's $33 a week apiece.
How much of your own material were you doing then? Or were you
not any.
Not any.
That was in my Elvis Presley days.
It was.
Yeah.
Let me see.
I can't do it, man. I used to really, because I had a thing about it. I just always dug. I still do.
I love it.
Entertainer, man.
We'd
all comb our hairs like him. And I even had a microphone around my neck, you know, so I could move around and jump around on stage.
Listen, everybody's got to listen to somebody.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a singer who came out of nowhere, right?
That's right.
And about 3 weeks ago, we played about an hour and a half of Elvis, you know. And this show's 15 years old, and I played Elvis right at the beginning, right? Like in 1956. And all the people, I play all kinds of music on the show, play classical music, play folk music, international stuff, and what have you, besides, you know, what's going on. And so the people who like, you know, Bach and Vivaldi were saying, what are you playing Elvis the Pelvis for? You know, I said, because he's a good singer. And then a couple of times in the last couple of years, you know, I just get on an Elvis kick, right? And I start playing, pulling out the old scratchy records and playing it, right? And the very up the now people, right? They say, what are you playing that old stuff for, right? Because it's good music, because he's a good singer. And you don't even go by the numbers, you know, never mind how many million records he sold and this and that and the other thing and what have you. Just go listen to it again. He really is. So we took that 50 golden hits thing and some of our old scratched up records and did a whole, and you know the response you get back? It's amazing. One time I played Jolson, just for the hell of it. I played one Jolson number and then decided to play some more. Pulled out one of his old albums. The phones lit up over at the station. And all of a sudden, we got calls and we got letters and we got things from people who had grown up with Elvis Presley's music. It was their song and this and that and the other thing. And tremendous nostalgia, especially the old stuff we were playing, you know.
Yeah.
And ain't nothing wrong with that. I said, you know, you got to love Elvis. You ain't an American if you don't love Elvis. It's un-American not to love Elvis.
That's right.
That's
right. What the Colonel said.
That's right. And the Colonel ought to know because he owns the country.
Why don't you say that, boy?
You got to love Colonel.
Thank you, Phil. Hey, let's do another number.
That's my manager, Phil Walden.
Yeah, right.
Do what?
Let's do another number.
Oh, man.
Is that going to wear out your fingers?
That bud's tasting pretty good. I just said he didn't talk.
Oh, hell. Fast. Pick up the beer and put down the accent.
Yeah.
That's good, good. Thanks.
Did you do his beans in here?
No, he didn't. This house is going to come down very shortly. Unfortunately, you see, Los Angeles needs another high-rise, another 60-unit apartment building, desperately. So they're going to take down this house, which I haven't found the like of anywhere around, and they're going to build that apartment building right on this property.
It's your house, ain't it?
No. Who's no, it? And the man who owns the house only owns it because he wanted to sell it to somebody so they could build an apartment building. And I call that progress. Of course, I don't say what I call progress.
I've got some pretty good... You want me to tell you what progress is?
Yes.
No, I don't want to cuss on the radio. I really don't, man. I don't allow one tree to be a bush hardly even to be cut out on my place at the ranch.
Good.
I can't stand to see a tree get cut. Because it looks kind of like you can take a chainsaw and get a tree in 50 seconds. A big tree.
Right.
As it took 50 years to grow.
Or more.
Like a lot of folks, you know, they come in up there and buy a lot of land up there and then sell the lumber off of it and then it's just laid to waste.
And they don't reseed.
Uh-uh.
No, I saw what they were doing, you know, with in West Virginia and Kentucky and Tennessee, between the lumbering and the mining, the tailings, the open pit mining, the hydraulic mining, and what have you. They've taken some of the most beautiful country in the world and they've raped it, man.
I know, man. It seems, though, that just about everybody's taking a better hold on it now, though.
Beginning to.
Cleaning up and stuff like that.
Now, I'll tell you, though, you go up north, north of San Francisco, and you have stands of trees that are among the most magnificent things that God ever put on this earth. Not all of them are protected. I'm talking about redwoods and big Douglas fir and the rest of it. They're not protected. An awful lot of that is open lumbering country, and that's primarily what Northern California does for a living. It cuts trees down, you know. And they fight the Sierra Club, and they fight the conservationists, and they fight everybody who's trying to turn a lot of that into national parks just to save those trees. Tooth and nail, because it's their livelihood. You take it away from them, you take that area away from them, and they're going to have to move or find something else to do where they are, and it's understandable why they're fighting it from their viewpoint.
Yeah.
But from everybody's viewpoint, I think that their interests, you know, maybe should be made subservient to the fact that there are fewer and fewer places where you can go, even in this great big country, and see things the way they were before man put his hand on it. And there are very few places you can go where the hand of man has not done some damage.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing, you got 300 acres in pasture, right?
Yeah.
And the rest is woods and hills. And you have that pasture for horses.
Right.
All right, that land's being used. And I'm sure that you're not doing anything to upset the ecological balance of the land. You're not cleaning out all the wildlife in the neighborhood.
No, we've got a biologist up there. He comes out and we've got, you know, a game program on the whole place that we've set up to, you know, get game through the winter and stuff like that.
Yeah?
And the pastures and things, you know, we try to improve, you know, even the pastures that's there now.
Well, I remember when I was a kid, you could drive outside of major cities in the east, not very far, like Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well,
it's what? It's a groovy town. Are you from there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I ain't going to say nothing against your town, but I agree with W.C. Fields, though.
Yes. Well, honey, it's a long time since both of us have been there.
W.C. had it right about. Yeah, and then that thing on his tombstone.
Well, how did it say exactly?
I'd rather be here than in Philadelphia.
No, I think it's the other way around. He said, I mean, on the whole, I'd prefer Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, to being there.
Oh, man, learns that. I thought it said I'd rather be here than in Philadelphia.
I don't know. Anybody out there
that was a good saying that way.
Straighten this out, will you?
No, it ain't no count. I ain't gonna never say that no more.
See, I took something away. No, but you could drive out of there 30 years ago and not drive too many miles and be in absolute forest country. And now you go around any major city in the United States right now and you drive and you drive and you drive. You get 60 miles out and 80 miles out and you still see the tract houses.
Yeah. And you know, one time I was out here, when was that, Bob, when I was out here and we went to Latin Fest? About 2 years ago. I don't know why I'm talking about all this land stuff, made me think about Lightning Hopkins. But we, you know, I dug him for a long time, since I was about 11, and he did a session here. And we got me and Mercer, and a couple of people went down to see it that night.
Yeah.
And I'd waited about 15 years to see him, and he'd come in. Easing in, him and his wife, having a little stack and his jug, you know, and he got to play in, man. And finished the session. And then Mercer, somebody told him that, you know, I was in there, I just had poke out. And so me and him got in there and got to just gigging, you know, just kicking. I wish we could have heard it played back sometime, but just as soon as we started playing, you know, everybody run to the knobs and got the tapes rolling. Hopkins said, "Do y'all turn them things off?"
Uh-huh.
So you, no way we could hear it.
That was for an album, by the way, called California Mudslide and Earthquake.
Right.
Oh, yeah? No kidding. So you've been a Lightning fan for years and years and years.
Yeah, a long time.
You know Randy Newman?
Sure.
You know,
you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You can?
Yeah.
You bummed out a while ago. What was that I said? Well, yeah, Mike Utley. Oh, y'all, everybody thought I said ugly last night? Golly, man, oh, Utley. I'm going to have to straighten that out tonight.
Yeah, watch your teeth. Your teeth there.
Everybody will be saying, that's ugly playing the... That's old Mike Ugly.
Yeah.
That's
right.
He was trying to be cool, and he let him pick it up. Sonny Joe played about four notes, and all Lightning said, "Wait, there must be another guitar here." He got two guitars, man. They sat around the house.
Hopkins run and got his, I guess he had two guitars or something.
Where is he, in Houston?
Yeah, usually.
Yeah. Yeah, the Weavers came through there about 10 years ago. And they went to the club that he plays all the time. And they were absolutely, you know, in awe, right? And he got up on stage and he introduced them as gracefully as he possibly could, you know, to all that audience. He says, some friends of mine, they're famous. You don't know them, but they're famous. They're called the Weavers. And Eric Darling got up and played and sang along with him. And the rest of the Weavers were saying, "Oh, you do that with Lightning Hopkins in his old club? Why not, man? You know, it's music." And as I say, Randy Newman, who is, I guess, about as sophisticated a songwriter as we have, his favorite singer is John Lee Hooker.
Hooker and Lightning and Muddy Waters, my three favorite all-time blues players. I like Hooker's voice. Yeah. I think a little better than anybody.
What about Brownie?
I don't. Sonny who?
Yeah.
Oh, Sonny Ted the harmonica?
And Brownie McGee.
I like Sonny and Lightning. I don't know the other guy you're talking about. I really don't know too much, you know, about all the old blues players, but I just know I like those three for sure.
Who else do you listen to?
There's one album out. Yeah, I believe this guy, I believe, is my favorite singer. And just all everything. And I got an album in the mail from Warner Brothers, and it was Robert William Scott.
Bobby Scott.
Man, I have never heard nobody sing like that.
He's a fine musician.
Huh? Not too much. I probably hadn't listened to him enough. But Scott, man, he just, as soon as he hit the first note, don't he play piano on those things?
Sure.
He has to play the thing with it, like.
Well, Bobby wasn't known as a singer so much as an arranger, a composer, and a piano player for years.
That old gravelly, raspy voice, man. That's
well, I don't know. He's only got about 2-3 albums on various labels.
I never heard of him before in my life. I had the album for 8 months at the house. One day I was just messing around, you know, and just put it on. And I can't understand why he ain't just there for me, you know.
Yeah, well, he's out here. Hey, Bob?
No, he's in New York.
Bobby Scott's in New York? I thought everybody moved out here. You're not going to, are you, Tony Joe?
No.
No?
Sure ain't.
We got about enough room left on this tape for one more number if you feel like doing it.
I think we better go, man. It's getting a little dark. Do you mind?
Well.
I need to grease my fingers. I mean, really sore. If I have some kind of hair oil or something, kind of slicking these strings out.
Sure.
I might play traveling bone.
Yeah.
I don't know why they're so sore, man.
You haven't been playing a lot.
I guess that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the ends of those fingers. Incidentally, he plays Martin D28.
I got to do Roosevelt or Pope for her because she wanted to do it later on.
Well, you did Roosevelt, so I guess you have to. Didn't you?
No, I didn't do Roosevelt.
I didn't. Oh.
You don't have something else you'd rather hear besides that? Pope and Roosevelt?
Yeah, well, you know, that she's got the top 40 syndrome. It doesn't matter if I play a thing first in Los Angeles. That's just a funny thing Daddy does behind his funny desk, right? but as soon as it shows up on KRLA, right, then it's official, see? And she learns every word, every note, all of her friends and what have you. And that's the music she likes, whatever it's all
is. Yeah, that's good. That's good, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's about two cats that are sitting there on this riverbank in the swamps. And they're sitting there on a log pondering on what they're going to do for the night. One of them's a real big, tall guy, and one's a little bit shorter. Their names are Roosevelt and Ira Lee. The river was dark and muddy, and the moon was on the rise, and all of the creatures in the swampland up to feed for the night. Roosevelt and Ira Lee were sitting there on a log. Ira Lee turned to Roosevelt and said, "I sure like to have a mess of bullfrog." He said, "Yeah, yeah, baby. Thank you.
down and get us some chicken. He said, yeah, yeah, baby. Lord, Lord, it sure would taste good. I love my chicken. He's even got a dance step with it.
Oh, really?
Hey, do a little bit of poke style. Let Heidi company. You want to hear some?
Four.
No, don't go out there. Stay in here, Heidi.
Go ahead, we can see.
Down in Louisiana, where the alligator grows so mean. I lived a girl that I swear to the world. Did the alligator dance, poke salad Annie, poke salad Annie.
Yeah, man. A little bit out of sync there, but what the heck. I'll tell you, if you want any more to Tony Joe White, and you better, there's only one thing you have to do. Two things. One, you buy his Warner record. And two, you can even buy the Monument record. They need the help. Troubadour, 9081 Santa Monica Boulevard, reservations 276-6168. And he'll be there through Sunday. Tony, thank you for coming down.
Thank you. Hey, that's some good tambourine playing.
Yeah. Pretty good for an old lady. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Dick Fowle. Thank you, madam.